Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
347-677-1835, your direct connection to the Voice of Liberty. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Dave. Look right over there. It's the Culture Vigilante. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
It's the Friday Night Roundtable. What's funny?
Nothing.
So, you had a good day down there in your part of the country.
Yeah, it was beautiful here today.
Yeah, here too. Did you get any rain at all?
No, none. All around me rained, but not where I live.
I got 1.1 inches. We're here in Springfield. We are caught up climatologically for the month of August. We're still way behind for the year. But anything else we can get in August now, we'll go to that year deficit because we're caught up for the month.
Wow. How did that happen?
I don't know. I think it was an accident. This hot spell, I think we finally broken the back of this big ridge we seem to be under that was giving us quite a hot spell. So the primary is over, and we're winding down here a little bit. We're going to have a meeting tonight after the show, you and I and the rest of the executive committee members, and we're going to kind of try to pan out an organized plan. I mean, we all know where we need to go from here. We need to talk about ballot initiatives. We need to talk about the upcoming general election. We need to keep people ginned up and moving. But we need to we're getting that organized. We have this radio show, and you talk to everybody on Wednesday nights, don't you?
I try.
Yeah, the Culture Vigilante. You know what you got coming up next week yet?
We will have a Patriot Spotlight next week, and we might start thinking about the veto session coming up here. And
good.
The rest is undetermined at this point.
Yeah, definitely time to get on that veto session. Who's your spotlight? Do you know?
It could be one of two people. We're thinking we've got, let's see here. Let me see if I can get back on here. Cooper County Tea Party coming up, which is probably who it will be. And then we have Commuter Patriots also coming up probably next week.
Cool. I'm driving up to Boonville on the 6th of September to actually address the Cooper County Tea Party. I'm really looking forward to that. That's a pretty good bunch of people up there.
Yes, they are. And, you know, it's amazing. Everybody's kind of got their own little way of doing things, but everybody seems to be focused on the same end result. So,
yeah.
We just want to make sure that.
They're getting about 50 to a meeting up there. That's a pretty good size for a Tea Party group.
Yeah, you know, most groups aren't really having general meetings like that, so that is awesome.
Right. Monday, I've got, on the Hour of Truth, I've got Dave Plemons coming along. We had our show last night. I don't know if you managed to catch the podcast. I knew you were out to a meeting last night. But we talked for the hour about one-issue voting and specifically about Missouri Right to Life and how they seem to attract a lot of one-issue voters. We talked about the pitfalls of one-issue voting, and I hadn't been off the air for 15 minutes before Dave Plemons of Missouri Right to Life was on the phone asking for some time, and I gave him the whole hour on Monday night. It'll be him and me, and he'll present their side of the story, and I'll tell you, we're unabashedly a grassroots conservative group here. We don't feel any need to give equal time and You know, when we talk to Todd Aiken, when Claire McCaskill calls up and says, hey, I want equal time, we'll tell her to jump in the lake. But this is a conservative issue, and we are talking about one-issue voting, and I thought it'd be great to have Dave come along. So we'll have Dave Plemons on Monday night to give us a counter on that one-issue voting thing, and then Thursday night we're going to talk about Proposition A for the hour, which is the proposition about police department control in Kansas City and St. Louis, specifically the only two places that I know of now where the state actually controls the police department.
I had Gary Wigert on my show last Wednesday. He did a very good job of outlining why local control is a bad thing, which is something you wouldn't ordinarily think when, you know, grassroots movements, you want local control. But in this case, he did a great job of outlining why local control is not the best result for this situation.
Right. And the argument, I guess, would be that that what Missouri did, the two separate times they did it, they didn't take over Kansas City and St. Louis at the same time, nor really for the same reason. The St. Louis Police Department was captured by the state, I believe, in the Civil War. Am I wrong?
I don't think you're wrong.
Uh-huh. And the Kansas City Police Department was captured by the state back when it was totally corrupted by the Pendergast machine. Back in the, about the turn of the century, about the late 18s and early 19s. And so for two different reasons, the police departments were captured by the state of Missouri and taken over. So one argument would be that still needs to be the case. The bigger the city, the rifer it is for corruption, don't you think, Lisa?
Yeah, you know, I would say what it all really boils down to is money.
Uh-huh.
So I think what this is a situation. Yeah, it does boil down to money. You know, the leaders in the major metropolitan areas are trying to get their hands on the money, the pension funds and the government money that's coming into the cities to fund police jobs.
Okay, you know, I have neglected going back and listening to the podcast of your Wednesday night show. I meant to come right home and do that. I was with you right up till the time he got there. I had to leave to go to a previous commitment about three-fourths of the way through the show, and I missed that segment. And I will certainly listen to that before we go on the air next Thursday night. I'd be very interested in hearing what he has to say about that in the way of the affirmative. But, you know, barring me hearing something that just really grabs me hard and pulls me in, I'm still going to say I'm in favor of local of control being as local as possible.
Well, ordinarily you would want that, but you know, if the powers that be that are running the city do not have good intentions, you know, that money that has been generated to fund police pensions and salaries and stuff could just all be twittered away if there's no accountability attached to it. And I mean, that's what it all boils down to, is that there's no accountability attached to the local control issue, and you know that money will just go to buying more votes and not taking care of the people who serve the city.
Well, there you go. What would be wrong with, I mean, I think when, and I actually never thought of that, because when I think of control of a police department, I really am generally thinking about operational control, and I think that's what comes into most people's mind when they hear that, you know, the day-to-day operations, the priorities of the police department, all that stuff. I never thought about the financial aspects. Would there be anything wrong with Missouri giving operational control back to St. Louis, but maintaining as they do for, I mean, I know the state of Missouri manages the police and fire pension funds for Springfield, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if it was going to be structured that way in this case, I mean, you know, that would be a possibility. I just don't think it's being structured that way.
Okay. Well, we'll look into that. We'll know a lot more about that, folks, before we get to November. And there are some other things on the ballot in November. We've talked quite a bit already about Proposition
Prop E.
Prop E, yeah, Proposition E, the insurance exchanges. We've talked quite a bit about Amendment 3, the Missouri plan, and we'll be touching on those. Amendment 3, by the way, folks, is one that I particularly have no advice for you on. I think it's six or one, half a dozen or the other, a yes or a no. One's as bad as the other in my mind. Prop E, as you all know, is a yes vote. Have we heard anything else from the Lieutenant Governor, Lisa?
I have not heard anything from Lieutenant Governor Kinder. I posted an article from the St. Louis Beacon on the forum pages yesterday stating, you know, stating what, you know, the plan is to attack the problem. The Lieutenant Governor's office is expected to make some kind of announcement. They're expecting to file a TRO, should have happened today, against the printing of the ballots.
Right. Do you know when those ballots are scheduled to be printed?
I do not know that.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know that there's a set time or if it's just is when Robin wakes up one morning and says, okay, I think I'll do it today. Okay, so here we are. We're headed into November, and we've had a rough and tumble primary season. We lost a lot of good chances. We gained very few good chances, in my mind. So we may well be headed toward another conservative legislature. We got Dave Spence running for governor, and in my mind, Lisa, I hate to be a naysayer, but in my mind, he doesn't have a prayer. I think we've got a shot at the lieutenant governor's job, maintaining that either with Lieutenant Governor Kinder or moving it to Cynthia Davis. I think we don't lose that to a Democrat. I think we've got a chance of winning the attorney general slot, don't you?
Absolutely. I believe that it's hands down it'll go for Martin.
Oh, you think? Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
I think we've got a shot at the Secretary of State simply because Carnahan isn't running again. So Shane is a relative unknown in high state executive office politics. Running against another relatively unknown in state executive politics. And I think that gives us a better than even chance, especially with the feel out there in the community, the grassroots feel. Now, geez, I'm setting myself up for it here again, I know, because I did for the primary. I was really disappointed that we didn't do a lot better. I think at the executive level that we do a little bit better than break even. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm going to push hard for Spence, but I'm not sure that he can even hold a candle to Nixon. I know he can't hold a candle to Nixon on the debate stage.
Isn't it kind of interesting the way they're campaigning? And I don't remember this. Maybe in any recent memory, maybe you remember this, but yesterday, we were trying to get Peter Kinder on the show earlier this week, and the reason that he couldn't come on is because he was part of a bus tour that's going across the state with all of the executive-level Republicans running and touring together, campaigning together across the state, and they were here in St. Louis. I think they were in Springfield for a little while.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember, and actually I saw some pictures somewhere on the Internet today of them campaigning, you know, pictures of all of them together. They've got, you know, they had...
Right.
Roy Blunt was there, which I thought was an interesting addition to the group, and Ann Wagner was there, and you know, and you had Scholar and Martin and Cole McNary and Dave Spence was there. I mean, everybody was there, you know, and they are running together across the state as an executive level slate of candidates,
right.
And I found that just an interesting way to campaign, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see kind of a Republican sweep executive level.
Well, I would be glad to see that, and as I said earlier, I think the biggest problem for Jay Nixon is Claire McCaskill. I think the turnout, the anti-Claire McCaskill turnout, is going to be so huge that might be the tipping point.
Well. Yeah, when I say a Republican sweep, I'm not real optimistic that Spence can beat Nixon. Although I did hear last night that the polls are very tight on him, so I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
I was surprised it's with him 4%, so, which surprised me. I mean, I wouldn't have expected that at all.
Right.
I would have expected Nixon to be able to trounce all over Spence handily, but I'm obviously wrong about that.
Okay, well, I'm not going to steal any of your thunder about the veto session, but there's a tax, a specific tax, that was leveled by the legislature in this last session, and I'm not going to go into any details, but the governor vetoed that, and it just amazes me that it was actually giving counties and cities a right to charge a use tax on vehicles, which means if you bought the vehicle out of state when you brought it back and registered it, you'd still have to pay a tax even as though you had bought it in the state. The governor vetoed that, and we're hoping that doesn't get overridden. The governor did the right thing, and my disappointment in that is that we handed that to the governor. I mean, here it is, an election year, for goodness sakes, and we're handing the governor a talking point that he vetoed a tax increase.
Well, you know, and I mean, we've had this discussion before, and I'm sure we'll continue to have it again. And actually, I'm in the middle of trying to post something on the Facebook page. You know, thinking ahead post-election, okay, with the Republicans, you know, hopefully we'll get, you know, a nice Republican win, you know, here in Missouri and then also on the federal level. Okay, so how are we going to hold feet to the fire? I mean, we're working hard to because the Republicans are a better alternative than the Democrats, we're working hard to put conservatives or quasi-conservatives in office. So now you have to think about after the election how to hold their feet to the fire. Okay, so we have seen, obviously, in Missouri, we've had a Republican majority in our legislature, and we're not seeing a lot of conservative things coming out of a legislature. It's not
right.
Been really good for us. So, you know, when they put through taxes like that, how does the grassroots stand up? You know, how do you stand up and fight back and demand service from your conservative legislators? You know, how do we turn that train around?
Well, you know, the idea is, and as I look around in my mind here, I don't know that I know the answer to your question, but I'll tell you what, in my mind, and you and I discussed this Wednesday night before I left in your intro, is, you know, we get off our butts for the first thing. You call it, you know, widening the net. I say we put out a call for some action on a St. Charles smoking ban, and of all of the grassroots out there, all of the people chatting, I mean, yeah, we got 635 active members who represent groups. There's probably as many as 7,000 or 8,000 people that we get reached to through these groups. And of those 635 listed members, 200 of them in any given day are on the Facebook page chatting, and we got two letters generated to the St. Charles County Commission. We put out another one, and I can't even remember what it was now, but another two letters. We've had maybe 5 or 6 letters generated from our grass fire alert. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, we deserve what we get if we're not going to hold their feet to the fire. And it looks to me like we're just not getting up off of our sofas and easy chairs and actually getting out and doing it.
Right, exactly. I don't know if people are just tired and burned out, or if they're just not feeling enough pain. I can't really understand where the passion has gone. You know, people are paying attention, they're watching, but they're just not doing anything about it. Over the summer, you know, we were watching. We thought people were all engaged in campaigns. You know, maybe not so much.
Yeah, could be. It could well be. And you know, for the Republicans, I know that the long, exceptionally long, by the standards of previous years, primary campaign between the top of the ticket, at the very top of the ticket, drug some people out, and it has inflamed a lot of passion. There may be some adrenaline letdown now that that's all over, although I do see quite a – and again, you know, this is something that you and I have been telling people for the better part of 3 months now on this show is – we need to move our focus. There's still a lot of passion out there in the Romney, Ryan, Obama thing going on, and that's, you know, that needs to not be our focus. We're never going to fix that mess up there until we fix this mess down here. Until we've got 50 states who've got the balls to say, we are the state of Missouri, don't tread on me, we're not going to fix that up there. And so, you know, we've got to change our focus. We've got to change our passion. And that's what this is all about, I think.
You know, I remember hearing Todd Akin campaign. I think it was a senatorial debate that the radio station in St. Louis put on, that he would be in favor of seeing a repeal of the 17th Amendment. And I think that would be a great step in the right direction.
Remind people what the 17th is.
17th Amendment is that said that we elect our senators, and instead of having our House of Representatives appoint our senators. And when that happened, we lost a great deal of power to control our states' rights.
That's right. If you people don't remember, the original Constitution was the House of Representatives, and our bicameral was modeled after the Parliament in England, where there was a House of Lords, an upper house, appointed by the aristocracy, the noblemen, the landed people, and then there was a House of Commons, which was voted in by just us common people down in the street. Well, the original Constitution had the House of Representatives elected by you and I, exactly the way we do it today, districts. You have a representative from your district, several representatives from a state equal to the state's number of electoral votes. But the senators were elected by the legislature of the state. So the senators were elected by our representatives to Jeff City. And what that did was it made the senator's interest the state's interest, not necessarily the people's interest or even the general population's interest. So now you've got people now, because they're voted by a majority vote in their state instead of by their state legislature, pandering to select groups of people. And that makes them not as bound to the interests of the state. If the 17th were not there, we would not have Obamacare today, because clearly the majority of states don't want it.
That's right. And it's a whole lot easier to unseat your local legislator for bad decisions that they make than it is to unseat a federally elected person.
That's exactly right. So here we are, and we're headed up now to the November election. And, you know, Lisa, as I think back on this, there's something about the November election and the campaigning that I'm hearing that is missing, something that nobody is talking about. Everybody's talking about the farm bill. Everybody's talking about Obamacare. Everybody's talking about have you noticed something missing in the discussion?
Yeah, you know, you and I have talked about this a little bit too off the air. You know, with this embedded with the idealization of bringing smaller government back to its constitutional roots, and with the influence that the grassroots has had on the political movement in the last couple of years, nobody is campaigning on constitutional issues. You don't hear them speak about the Constitution in any of their speeches. You don't hear them talking about reducing the size of government and bringing it back to its constitutional roots at all. And I'm just a little flabbergasted by that, because the grassroots movement and the Tea Party movement, or whatever you want to call it, has been such an, I mean, you know, it's a formidable force to be reckoned with. And that is the driving force of that movement, and no one is talking about it now.
Well, I agree. And part of the part we might get into after the break into what's going on there and why that might be. You and I might sit here and we might just figure that out between the two of us. We're going to take a quick break. Lisa and I are going to come back. Our number is 347-677-1835 if you want to get in on this discussion about campaigning in the Constitution, 347-677-1835.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We are back. It's the Voice of Liberty, Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is the Friday Night Roundtable. I'm Dave. Right over there is Lisa. So we were talking about the Constitution. Listen, it's 347-677-1835 if you guys have some thoughts on this. We were talking about the Constitution and how it seems to be missing in any of the campaign rhetoric. You know, like you say, you'd think that this year, people would be talking about the need to get back to the constitutional principles, but we don't seem to be hearing a lot of that.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of struck me, kind of hit me all at once, and I thought, well, you know, that with all the pandering, because I do believe that there's a certain amount of pandering to the grassroots movement. They do need the grassroots movement to support them in elections, and we are the most active voters right now. I'm not hearing anything out of the Romney campaign about constitutional principles or founding principles, or, you know, none of the buzzwords are coming out that I'm hearing. I'm not really hearing a lot of it from the statewide campaigners either.
Well, you know, I don't know that I agree with you 100% that we are the most active voters. As I look at the results of this recent primary, I'm disappointed that we're not more active. Good grief. Tea partier after tea partier after tea party fell under the wheels of the bus on this last primary. And, you know, my thought is, and tell me if you don't think this might be right, I might be way out in left field, but of course we're not going to hear anything about the Constitution returning to the founding principles from the Democrats. And I think for the most part, the Republicans, especially those Republicans in Washington, D.C., and I include our friend Todd Akin and of course the Hartzlers and that crowd and of course Mitt Romney, they kind of want us to go away. You know, they don't want to keep feeding this monster that keeps trying to pull them farther to the right even than they want to be. They don't want to keep feeding this thing that is trying to hold their feet to the fire, and they just kind of want us to go away.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that, you know, campaigning is such a shallow and kind of a, you know, I find it distasteful in a lot of ways because, you know, nobody ever gets into details about how they're going to take care of business once they get into office. They don't want to give you too much, and I understand that. However, you know, I mean, I want to hear a little bit about how I want some detail. I want somebody to try to impress me. And I'm not really hearing anything coming out of anybody's mouth here that's really impressing me. And I don't know if the Republicans don't think that they have to now because they think they're riding this Obama wave that they don't think that they have to work that hard to impress me. You know, they think they're going to ride the anti-Obama sentiment. I'm thinking ahead. I'm thinking about what's going to happen, you know, the day after the election, and we start, you know, building the foundation to kind of get back some of the things that we've lost. You know, so the things that have been executive ordered away from us that, you know, they're hoping that we forget about. I want to see things overturned. You know, I want to see them go back to putting things back into the Constitution that was taken away, putting things back into on a track that's going to lead to smaller government. And what I'm worried about mostly is that they think that we're going to have a short memory and we're going to forget about all of those things that happened during the Obama administration, and they're not going to be expected to correct the problem.
I'm not worried about that. I'm sure that that's what they're thinking. I'm sure they're thinking we have a short memory. What I'm worried about is that we do. I'm worried that their hope and prayer might come true. As I look again, you know, what you and I were talking about, two letters to St. Charles County, a terrible, terrible loss, disappointing primary, people running around saying that, you know, their candidate didn't win, so they're not going to vote for president at all.
A lot of that is the Ron Paul factor.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that really has to be dealt with. That Ron Paul issue is a problem, and it's going to cause us a problem in the general if we don't find a way to deal with it. I think part of the problem with some of the races, maybe not necessarily the state races, but like for committee races.
Right.
I think people, some of the candidates didn't get voted in because they were all labeled as Ron Paul.
Right.
Frankly, they've got a bad reputation now from the way they've behaved during the caucus process, and you know, they're not looked at as favorable candidates. And we need to kind of find a way to coalesce and work together.
I agree.
There's something in there that's going to cause a problem in the general, I'm afraid.
And we're going to see. Now, Ron Paul is about 165 years old now. This is the last shot he had. He's not going to go up there with his walker 4 years from now and give this thing another go. We can be pretty sure of that. So we're going to find out here in the next 2 or 3 years whether these people really have any principles or whether, you know, this was just some god that they all bowed down to. I think the way, you know, I could kick Mitt Romney and his people, his handlers, in the rear end. I think what we needed to have done, what they needed to have done a considerable amount of time ago, is say, we welcome Ron Paul's people at the convention. We want them to have some input into the platform, you know, and that could have been easily done. I mean, you know, audit the Fed, do away with the Department of Education. There are a myriad of things that Ron Paul stood for that we could have allowed that he got into the platform. And I think that would have soothed a lot of ruffled feathers.
Oh yeah, I would agree. I mean, and it's not too late. I mean, I think, you know, if Romney takes the election in November, I don't think it's too late. You know, I think it would be a really good idea for him to reach out to the Ron Paul folks and give them. And that's really what started me thinking about this talk of constitutional rhetoric in the campaign debate. The Ron Paul people did have quite an influence during the caucus system.
Right.
And, you know, Ron Paul has such a strong constitutional following, you know, people who are very constitutionally minded. And I am kind of surprised that there's not an effort on a state and federal level to see a little bit more of that conversation take place, because there's definitely an influence there. And I think that they need to be dealt with.
Absolutely. You know me, Lisa. I'm a libertarian. I'm very, very libertarian with a small L. Not a member of the Libertarian Party, folks. But Ron Paul's foreign policy, and that is extremely important in my mind for a presidential candidate. His defense posture scared the hell out of me, and I would not vote for him because of that. And that's important because that is one of the only things that the president ought to be screwing with. He ought to be screwing with the Department of Education or any of that other stuff. Those either don't belong in Washington at all, or in the case of making laws about light bulbs, they belong in the legislature. And he scared me to death on that. But except for that, he was the most constitutional candidate on the stage.
Absolutely, and that's what he's got a great following, and I think a lot of people feel like you do. I mean, I felt that way as well. He's got a very good, his domestic stuff was great. His constitutional talk, his rhetoric was fabulous. You got on the foreign policy, and everybody just kind of shuddered, especially with this day and age, with the religious war that we're fighting with the Muslim extremists over in Afghanistan and Iraq and in the Middle East. You can't have that kind of foreign policy.
Absolutely.
Snuffed out in a heartbeat.
After World War One, 15-second history lesson, after World War One, we went into that, bring all the troops home. We don't need to be scattered all over the world. And what that cost us, what that isolationist policy cost us, was the invasion of Normandy Beach and more people killed in one day than the Korean War and Vietnam War combined. More Americans killed in one day than those two wars combined, and we would be asking for that again. I mean, we only don't have to do that ever again because we have a presence in the places in the world where it serves our interest.
Well, and I feel the same way, Dave. I think that you absolutely have to. I'm a peace through strength person. Kind of that Reagan strength issue. And I don't think that you can. I don't think that the world can maintain its peace. And I don't think certainly America can't maintain itself as a superpower unless we have strength. The other countries of the world just do not recognize that placid, let's everybody go along to get along kind of attitude. And I think the only way that you're going to keep world peace is if America maintains its very strong strength position in the world. So Ron Paul certainly didn't get that. I don't know how, I don't know how that we're ever going to get by and convince the other Ron Paul supporters that they need to get on board with this election and to get Obama out, because it's voting a third party in the national election is not going to do anybody any good. It's just a vote for Obama. Maybe we need to put that debate aside, or hopefully we can try to get the Ron Paul people to put that debate aside and just focus on just getting Obama out of office.
Absolutely. And, back to what you and I were talking about earlier, and I have a plan here, and I don't know how many people would agree with it. And it doesn't matter. I don't know how we would go about doing it, quite frankly, if we did get enough people to agree to it. Maybe you know how we could get people to do it. But anyway, here's the plan. The plan is the way you hold Romney's feet to the fire, the way you hold Dave Spence's feet to the fire is – the day they get inaugurated, you start looking for their replacement. And you let them know that 4 years from now, if they don't do it right, we'll mount a strong primary to boot an incumbent president.
I think that's a great idea. And actually, I don't know if I've said this on this show before, but I think that we need to do that for Roy Blunt. I think there needs to be a target on his back.
Oh, absolutely. There's not even any saving him in my mind. I mean, he's a goner. We could let Mitt Romney and Dave Spence know from day one, we've got your replacement ready. But it's not a done deal. You can still save yourself, but there's no saving Roy Blunt. Not in my mind.
It's hard to get out the incumbent, but I'm telling you, I think that there are enough people angry with Roy Blunt that we could probably do it.
Okay, we promised tonight. We promised that tonight we were going to talk a little bit about the Second Amendment. You and I have Maybe slightly different opinions on the Second Amendment and where we'd ought to go with that. But we're going to start this off, the Second Amendment talk, by just hearing from a guest, Chris from Maryland. He's been listening in, and he has some things about the Second Amendment that he wanted to get in. How are you doing, Chris?
Not bad. You?
How's the weather in Maryland? I'm great, thanks.
Oh, it's humid and dry and horrible as always.
What do you think of the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution?
Well, what brings me to this is, like I said, I was just checking in, and you see the shootings, the resource council. You see the liberals coming out saying all kinds of horrible things of Black Panthers. I have family members in the military. I've already been warned about certain practices. The Second Amendment is there to protect us against what we're going through now. As far as I'm concerned, I think our government's pushing for this stuff, sort of martial law, to create certain things. It brings to mind the burning and the fire in 1930s Germany when Hitler took over and blaming his opposition. I guess that's a little drastic on my part, maybe, but I do see certain aspects of that colliding with what we're going through today.
Okay, so I think you are pretty close to where Lisa's at on this. Now, tell me something. Have you ever heard, do you have any friends or do you have any liberal friends or have you ever heard any liberals suggest to you that we need to eliminate every gun in the United States? No hunting rifles, no shotguns, no pistols in your nightstand to protect you from a home invader. Have you ever heard anyone go that far?
Not that far. However, I am in the midst of a horrible marriage I'm trying to get out with a Mexican who was liberal, and she got conservative until she started working for the local government. They're never going to put it that way. It's always about the safety of people because you know that for a fact that gun-free zones always protect the innocents. As long as you give criminals the ability to get guns, we're always safe if we don't have them ourselves. That's just illogical. They never portray it that way. It's always about the safety of the kids.
Okay. But you've never heard anyone suggest to you that we need to do away with guns completely. Have you ever heard anyone on our side suggest that there ought to be an unmitigated right to own weapons, that no weapons ought to be accepted by the federal government, that we'd ought to be able to own anything we want?
As far as the conservative side, no, I've never said we should own anything. All I've ever heard is the liberals always put out, you can't own certain things because it's horrible to kids. The worst thing that ever happened to America is gun-free zones. All it does is create mass shootings where we see more death. So,
what do you think, Lisa?
I was screening a call, but I'm not for gun control. I think that we need to have a wider conceal and carry maybe even a wider open carry. I think it just helps. Statistics show that it decreases crime. And when you look at the movie theater shooting a few weeks ago, and had those people been allowed to be able to defend themselves in that theater, I think we would have seen a lot less casualties.
Are you under the impression that there's a law in Colorado that you can't carry a gun into a theater?
Well, I think the theater had its own rules and people.
Okay, I'm not trying to trick you in that. I didn't know the answer.
Yeah,
Mike Smith's with us. Mike Smith from Buffalo, also a member of the Missouri Grassroots Coalition. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing just great. Dave, yourself?
I'm good. Mike was going to weigh in on this. Come on, Mike.
Well, I was just going to say that the theater in Colorado, they did have it posted where you couldn't bring your concealed carry in. But, there's a town in Georgia, I don't know if you mentioned it yet or not, where they actually have a law where everybody that lives there has to have a gun and ammunition for that gun. And they've had it now for way over a decade. I want to say almost like 15 years. And they haven't had any murders and stuff committed there, any real violent crimes from any of the citizens and stuff there.
Well, just as
I don't know that we need to go necessarily that far, but I do think that we need to have that right to be able to carry and protect ourselves.
I agree. Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. I guess my point on this, though, is when we go so far as to say, I don't think there needs to be any restraints. If I want an Uzi, I can have an Uzi. If I want an M16, I can have an M16.
I got a question for you. How come nobody ever brings up the fact that centuries before we had guns, people still killed people?
Well,
and they also had cannons in their yard too.
It's not the weapon. I mean, come on. You got a South African people slopping arms off of people.
Okay,
it's not the weapon.
So debate. I think that is part of the debate. I think it's always been part of the debate, and it's kind of the, you know, if you outlaw guns, the only people who have guns will be the outlaws, and I think that's always been part of the debate.
I thought that was called gun-free zones.
I agree wholeheartedly, and so I'm back to my original question: which one of you has ever heard a liberal say no guns at all, get rid of them all?
Oh, I've heard that before.
Have you? From who?
Sure. Oh, I don't know. I've just heard it in the conversation. I know people who think that, you know, there would no guns at all. You know, you take care of the guns and that'll be the end of it.
They never frame it that way. They always say you got to protect people. They never say no guns. They just say it's a gun-free zone. They think you pass
the
law.
There are a few that will say it, but they're not as many.
Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
There are a few that will say they don't want people to have any guns, period, but they're much rarer. I'll agree with that. But.
Yeah, the general argument is that we need to not have guns that kill 70 people in 2 minutes.
Well,
maybe we need to teach people a little bit more of morals and teach them something. The problem's not the gun. They'll find the weapon. The weapon's a tool.
Yeah.
That's an ignorant argument, and that's based on people who don't have any logic or understanding of what's going on in the world, and that's the biggest problem.
You're absolutely right, Chris. Now, flash back to history, to all of that time when there weren't guns, before guns came along, or before modern guns came along, and tell me what weapon the average citizen had access to that killed 70 people in 2 minutes.
Was there many people who that many people in one area at a time?
Seven.
Depending where you are, how many is there? I mean, look at this argument.
Okay.
How many people got upset?
There were 70 people in the theater when President Lincoln got shot.
Well, here's what I would say to that person.
But look at it this way: people get upset because we dropped the bomb, and they always go past the argument that the argument right after we dropped the bomb, we were going to have a land invasion, and we would have had millions more people killed. It works both ways. It's logic. And unfortunately, no matter what you do with a liberal, logic doesn't ever come into their focus. How do you defeat ignorant arguments with logic? You can't.
My argument, Chris, is that it's not coming into our focus either. You know, we have a right under the Second Amendment to bear arms, a right that was given to us by our forefathers that was unmitigated and totally outside of the power of the federal government to regulate in any way. Can I have an atomic bomb in my basement?
Wait, if you're part of the Tea Party or a conservative, you're already a terrorist, so what's your point?
My point is, can I have an atomic bomb in my basement? I mean, is it all right with you if I have an atomic bomb in my basement? Is it all right?
It's all right with me? Yeah, because if you're dumb enough to use it, I mean, because if you are and people know about it, they're going to take you out anyway. I have no problem with not vigilante, but regular justice. And if they're smart enough to figure it out,
Okay, let's go back to the intent of the Second Amendment, okay? The Second Amendment was put in place to guard against tyranny. It was the last defense against tyranny from the government. Okay, so barring the atomic bomb argument, okay, if I want to have an Uzi and if I want to own, you know, a gun that can, you know, kill 70 people in less than 2 minutes, I want to own that gun. If somebody can militia bust down my door, who's coming at me with that same gun?
All right. So
the U.S. who's breaking into people's doors who are the wrong people and shooting their dogs and killing them.
Okay. So,
I want to be armed the way that the militia may be armed, coming after me. I want to be able to.
You want to have an atomic bomb then, because the government that you're trying to protect yourself from has plenty of atomic bombs, hand grenades, 50 cals, bazookas, BARs.
That's a logical argument, because nobody who wants to preserve freedom wants to have an atomic bomb and kill everybody. All they're trying to do is protect themselves.
Yeah, I mean, the atomic bomb is kind of a misnomer. I mean, if the atomic bomb goes off, we're all done, you know?
Well, my perspective is that what they had in the Revolutionary War with the muskets and all that, everybody had the ability to have the same type of gun.
Right.
Now, I think as far as the Second Amendment, we need to be able to continue to have
the equivalent to be able to protect ourselves
from the same type of person that may come up to my door and try to do something here, whoever it may be.
Did we have the same guns Britain had? We had nothing that Britain had. Britain had everything on us. And, you know, there's no reason we ever should have won that damn war. You know, going to go look up, you know, crossing the Delaware. There's no reason we should have won the Revolutionary War. Everything we are now today goes against everything that happened. George Washington praying, looking up to God. It's an ideal. It's an understanding. The biggest problem we have in this country now is we don't know where we stand. We have no morals. We have no understanding. We don't stand on any firm ground. We're going the same way every other country in this world is going. And we think government can create and help people, and they can't. They hurt everybody. We're the greatest country on this world, on this earth. And by allowing Obama and all these people to destroy us just does a disservice to all those people who gave their life up for something that they didn't even have an understanding for.
Well,
what they did in that war was unbelievable.
I agree with you, Chris. And right over there across the table from me is Mike Smith. And between the two of us, you're talking to 50 years of military service. So we understand what you're saying. There's no doubt about that.
Okay. Well, I got some family in the military. I'm just saying it's a different mindset. I don't know. I've researched the Revolutionary War. I've researched World War II. Neither one of those wars we should have won. You understand, it's not by accident we won. It's not by accident we're the greatest country in this world. It is by our own stupidity and ignorance that we're voting in people who are destroying it and allowing evil to come through. So what happens if we go through? If we allow the Second Amendment to die in the United Nations understands who has guns. Why do they want to know who has guns? I don't know. We'll knock on the door, 1930s Germany?
Okay.
What the hell? And those who shoot those people in the head, they're still going to be killed. So why do they want to, you know? The problem is, and you understand this, those who want guns to protect themselves aren't out there killing people.
All right, Chris, we're up against the clock. Get your last word in.
I'm just saying.
Okay. Thanks for the call. That was a great call,
no problem,
Chris. Thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, and you know, I don't hear anyone saying we need to get rid of the Second Amendment. I know Lisa's got some friends who've said we need to do away with guns completely. I've never heard that. And I'm not suggesting we need to do away with the Second Amendment. What I'm saying is that if you don't believe I can set up a 50 cal on the corner of my porch, if you don't believe that I could walk down the street with a flak jacket on and 14 hand grenades hanging from it, if you don't believe that I can have a bazooka or a BAR, then you don't believe in an unrestricted right to firearms. And as long as you folks on the right, it's just you and Charlton Heston that get to say where the line's drawn, that's okay. But don't let one of these liberals get in and help you decide where the line is drawn, because then it's no holds barred. The Second Amendment says I can have anything I want, when that's not really what you believe.
No, I mean, I'm not sure about that. I think that, well, when the Constitution was written, we know the intent of it.
Yes.
You know, there were no nuclear bombs. There were certain things that were just not even fathomable.
Right.
The intent of the Second Amendment and the Constitution was to be able to arm the citizens against tyranny from the government.
That was one of the main points. Yes.
So
basically, yeah. then, if you seek parity, an atomic bomb is okay, and a bazooka is okay, and a BAR is okay, and a 50 cal is okay, and hand grenades are okay, and napalm is okay.
Well, some of those things are okay. You know, some of those things are maybe not okay, but I'm telling you, if the government can come in and napalm my house, you have to be able to defend yourself. I'm not sure what to that question. I don't think I need napalm. You know, I certainly don't want I'm probably not even going to ever have a hand grenade. But reality is tying the hands of the people to defend themselves against tyranny is not the answer either.
Okay, Mike.
And we also don't need to let the argument be framed that we just need to be concerned with hunting rifles just for sportsmen.
I don't know, no, and I would never want that argument framed. I would want the argument framed in terms of self-protection, in terms of being able to kill someone who's trying to kill you. I would want the argument framed in terms of protecting your life and your property. I would want the argument framed in being able to protect yourself and your community from either invasion by our own government, invasion by a foreign government, or a situation of civil unrest. And I would want to contend that there are some weapons that we should allow citizens to have to do that, and there are some weapons that we should not allow citizens to have to do that. Atomic bombs being one of them.
One of the other things that I wanted to point out, too, is even during the Revolutionary War, people still had cannons sitting in their front yards in front of their houses.
It wasn't
just for decoration, either.
No, it wasn't.
And the reality is you can't get the materials to make an atomic bomb as a private citizen. So the point is a little moot, isn't it?
Okay, well, forget the atomic bomb. I can go buy a handheld...
grenade launcher,
or a missile that shoots down airplanes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, if tanks are rolling down the main street, you know, and they're willing to, you know, they're willing to, you know, if the president is willing to exercise martial law, I think you got to be able to defend yourself.
I don't know anyone, quite frankly, in my personal life, who I don't want to have a gun even strapped to their side as they walk down the street. By the same token, I don't know anyone personally who I want to walk down the street with 12 grenades.
Well, it's not something that I would be comfortable with either, but... You know, walking down the street with 12 grenades. You know, what's the circumstance? You know, has martial law been executed, or is the person just walking down Main Street with 12 grenades?
Quite frankly, if martial law were executed, Lisa, and Mike and I had 40 people with 30-06s and automatic rifles. We could go find some grenades.
Yeah.
You know, we could go find some napalm.
You could?
Sure. But I think that's a far cry from the average person ought to have it in their closet. That's my take. That's my take. You know, Mike.
I'm not sure.
Well, I think you do have some valid points that, you know, there are some things that maybe need to be included in the discussion that people don't need to have. I don't know that many people would need to have a personal rocket launcher or a grenade launcher or, you know, something like that. But if I want to have an M16 or an AK-47 or some kind of fully automatic assault rifle, I see that as the equivalent of what they had in the Revolutionary War. They still had the same type of guns. It wasn't like, you know, they had that much of a tactical advantage with the guns that they were using versus the ones that we had here.
Okay. Everybody's had a say. Lisa, you can have the last say.
Okay.
Well, no, before I give you the last say, I want to say something. I love the Constitution. And I love the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. I don't want anyone listening to this to think that given the situation the way it is, we've not changed it from the day it was written, and I will defend, no matter how I feel, your right to own an Uzi or a hand grenade for that matter. Because that's what the Constitution says. And to my liberal friends, if you want it any other way, then you better figure out how to fix the Constitution, because you're not gonna get any help from me or anybody like me as long as the Constitution says what it says. Go ahead, Lisa, have the last word.
No, I don't think I can wrap it up any better than that. You know, don't mess with the Constitution. It's almost the most perfect document that probably was ever written, and the Founding Fathers were geniuses before their time. You know, if the Constitution is followed, we have the best government in the world. So I'm with you. I'd protect it to my dying day.
Well, yeah. Mike, thanks for coming.
Welcome. Glad to be here.
It's time to wrap
Enjoy
it up.
The show, you know.
Thanks. It's time to wrap it up, Lisa. You've got some things coming up Wednesday. Tell us again what that is.
We'll have some Patriot Spotlight interviews going on, and we're hoping to maybe talk about some veto session stuff.
Monday night we'll have Dave Plemons from Missouri Right to Life. Thursday night we'll be talking about Prop A, police control in Kansas City and St. Louis. And then next Friday we'll have another roundtable, certainly as lively and exciting as this one. Lisa, thanks a lot. I always enjoy being here with you.
As with you, Dave. Thanks.
Thanks for coming, Mike. We'll see you all next week.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.